gentlemen, good morning. It is fabulous, fantastic, faith-filled Friday, September 6, 2013. My name is Paul Hutchings. I'm dialing in from beautiful Southeast Idaho. Another great day to be alive. This is the Think and Grow Rich call. Want to welcome you. Want to just have you imagine hundreds of entrepreneurs right now with arms wide open. So grateful that you're joining into our community. So grateful that you're plugging in to this powerful group of people who start their days off every morning, Monday through Friday, with inspiration, with hope, with light, with truth, with knowledge, with understanding of how to go forth and how to visualize better things down the road, and not only how to visualize better things, but to understand how to actually take action and move forward and develop that mindset of that person who is living a purpose-filled life. That's one of the things we do on this call every day, my friends. It excites me. It fires me up. And you know what else is really cool? Is I get on this call. We've been doing this now for over 3 years. We've got people from all over the world dialed into this call. And I get on the call, and I hear people dialing in from Southeast Idaho, where I live. I hear people that I heard a lady last week, a couple weeks ago, dial in Kathy. This is a lady that I actually met a few years ago in my network marketing journey. Our paths crossed, and then they went separate ways, and all of a sudden, I hear her dial into the call. Isn't that amazing? I mean, this call is spreading like wildfire all over the world. I believe it's a movement. I believe it's a wake-up call for people. I believe it's a place where we can just plug in and help people understand that, you know what, life is great. Life is beautiful. Life is a gift. We can do great things here on this earth, and it's a place where we can come and support each other. Those of us who are different, those of us who are a little bit strange, those of us who actually say, you know what, I'm going to have a dream in life. I'm not just going to go through life average and ordinary and mediocre. I'm not going to go through life just believing what everyone else tells me to believe. I'm not going to go through life just walking in the 97%. No, I'm going to be different. I'm going to step up a little bit. I'm going to stand a little taller. I'm going to stick my head up above the clouds, and I'm going to see if I can see something off in the distance that's more beautiful than what I've been told and what I've been taught. And you know what? I'm going to see that beautiful vision, and I'm actually going to go to work and make it happen, my friends. That's who's on this call. If you're on this call, I can almost guarantee that that's a description of the type of person that you are, and I just want to give you a round of applause. I want to say I appreciate you. I respect you. I admire you. I look up to you. Thank you for giving me an example on a daily basis of someone who's out there doing great things in the world. My friend, you are awesome. And if you're excited to be aligned with a group of people who are like that, I want to hear you screaming at the phone when I unmute the lines right now. You guys are so awesome. I love you guys. I really, truly do love starting my day with each of you every day, Monday through Friday. Keeps me going. It lifts me up. It inspires me that there's so much good in the world, you know, that there really is, and you guys are just proof positive of that fact. So thank you, seriously, thank you for being just awesome. So, my friends, we've got some good stuff to cover today. What I want to do is I want to share just a quick little story, and then we're going to jump into our regularly scheduled study of Think and Grow Rich, where we're going to finish out the fears, right, the six ghosts of fear we're learning. But quick little story. It has a good little lesson. Last night, I took my family to the local fair. It's the Eastern Idaho State Fair. This fair has been coming to town every year since, gosh, since I can remember. Since I was a little kid, this was like the highlight of, you know, my life. You know, the fair, the rides, the food, the games, right? All the stuff that you can associate with a local fair. So this fair is here in East Idaho, and my wife and I, we took the kids yesterday, and boy, did they have fun. And last night, at the end of the night, my wife had told the kids we were going to go get them some treats. So we go into the food court area, and we're getting some treats, and some of the kids wanted cotton candy. Some of them wanted snow cones. And so we're sitting to the side of this booth last night, and I've got a red raspberry snow cone in my hand, and my 7-year-old Caden has a red raspberry snow cone in his hand, and some of the other little boys have cotton candy, and I saw a teaching moment for my kid, for my 7-year-old, and I said, "Hey, Caden," and he said, "Yeah, Dad." You know, he's eating his snow cone. I said, "Hey, Caden, how much?" I said, "How much did it cost these guys to make this snow cone?" And he looks at me and he's like, "Free?" I was like, "No, Caden, come on. How much did it cost?" I said, "How much did this cup cost?" And he thinks about it and he's like, 10 cents? I was like, yeah, probably about 10 cents. I said, "How about the ice?" He said, he thought about it for a minute. He's like, "Free." I was like, "Yeah, probably the ice was free." I said, "How about the red stuff, you know, the raspberry stuff they put in the snow cone to make it tasty for us?" And he thinks about it, and he's like, "40 cents? I was like, "No, probably not that much." He's like, "Well, Dad, it comes in a big bottle, and it's probably a few dollars." I said, "Yeah, it's probably a few dollars, but they only put a couple squirts in. So how much do you think the squirts were?" And so he thinks for a minute, and he's like, "Probably another 10 cents. I was like, "Yeah, probably about that." I said, "So, Caden, how much did we pay for this snow cone?" And he looks at the sign, and then he looks back to me and he says, $1.50. I was like, "Yeah, $1.50. And I said, "So how much did they pay to make the snow cone?" And this little 7-year-old, his wheels are turning. He's adding up the math. And he turns back to me and he's like, $0.20. And I was like, "Yeah. So how much money did they make?" And he's adding it up, and he throws out a figure that's wrong. He's like, "No, okay, think about it. $1.50 minus 20 cents, $1.30, that's their profit. They made $1.30. And he kind of gets a smile on his face. He's like, "Oh, so they made the money in selling us the snow cone." I was like, "Yep, that's right." I said, "Is that a pretty good business?" He says, "Yeah, that's a pretty good business." I said, how many snow cones do they have to sell to make $10? And he's like, "About 10? I was like, yeah, that's about right. So I'm kind of just smiling as I'm helping my son recognize how business works a little bit in the world. And then I saw this piece of cotton candy that my 5-year-old Camden was eating. I said, "Gated, I said, ask your mom how much it costs. I said, how much did that cotton candy cost?" And he's like, $3. I was like, "Yep, that was $3 we paid for that cotton candy." I said, "Ask your mom how much it costs to make it," because my wife, when she was younger, she used to work in a cotton candy booth. So Caden says to my wife, he says, "Hey, Mom, how much does the cotton candy cost to make?" And my wife says, "About 5 cents." And my son Caden's eyes get big and his jaw drops to the floor. Like, he gets this look of, like, amazement as he's thinking that it costs 5 cents to make this cotton candy and we paid $3 for it. And then I literally start laughing out loud, and I was like, "Caden, is that a good business?" He's like, "Yeah, Dad, that's a good business." And we're kind of laughing and just smiling as I'm helping my children kind of see some different things in the world and kind of see how business works and kind of see how money is made. And I'm thinking about this little experience, and I'm just thinking about how important it is to just look around us sometimes and just be aware of what's happening. You know, I think about teaching my kids, and you know, I don't think entrepreneurs are any better than anyone else. I would never say that. I would never say that they're any better than anyone else. What I would say is things work a certain way, and it's so good to be aware of how things work. It's so good to just, you know, I want my kids to grow up having options. I don't ever want to say to my kids, you know, kids, you've got to be an entrepreneur. You've got to be a business owner. I would never say that. However, I do want them to just kind of realize how things work in the world. I was talking to my sister last week, and, you know, my sister, she works at a car wash, and she's worked there for quite a while. She's an awesome girl. She's got this just great positive attitude and beautiful smile, and I know the people at the car wash, they love her, and they come back, and they really enjoy being served by her. But I was talking to my sister last week, and my sister was talking about how she's worked at this car wash for so long, and her boss doesn't ever really give her very much money for working there, and he doesn't give her raises that often. And she was sitting at my kitchen table talking about, you know, how she was bummed that she knows her boss is making all this money, but yet he's only paying her a certain wage. And I was talking to my sister, and I was like, well, you know, you realize that as a business owner, he can only pay you so much. There's a certain point that he cannot pass in paying you more money. And she was kind of, you know, talking to me and my wife, and she's like, well, I don't understand. She's like, I'm such a good worker, and, you know, people tell me all the time, you know, how much they like me. And I was like, I know, sis. I was like, but the thing is, you know, you get paid. And I was trying to help her understand this lesson that I learned from Jim Rohn a while back, which is you get paid for bringing value to the marketplace. And there's only so much that the position of washing cars and detailing cars, there's only so much that position is worth. No matter how nice you are, no matter how big and bright your smile is, no matter how much the people love you, no matter how much you go the extra mile in your job, there's only so much that position is worth, right? And I was sitting there at my kitchen table trying to help my sister understand these principles of how the world works, of how business works. You get paid for bringing value to the marketplace, right? Understanding business, understanding cost and profit, understanding that with business owners, your profit potential is literally directly related to the amount of value you can deliver to the marketplace. You're not capped by the things that you're capped by as an employee, right? The value of a position. As a business owner, the more value you can deliver, the more money you can earn, right? I just think it's so important to realize how things work and to look for these little lessons and understand them ourselves and help others understand these little lessons so that we can make educated decisions. Again, not saying one's better than another. It just, you know, like Jim Rohn says, these are the facts. They're just the facts. It's just how things work, right? So, good stuff. I just want to share that with everyone. I think it's fun to recognize little lessons of entrepreneurship and help people understand them and help ourselves understand them. And, you know, most of us on this call, we're entrepreneurs. And it's cool, isn't it, to understand that as entrepreneurs, we can grow our incomes to as large as we want to grow them. We can add as much value as we want to add value to the marketplace. I just think that's really neat to know that we, my friends, are in the right place if we want to be unlimited in our growth, if we want to be unlimited in our service to the marketplace, if we want to be in a position where we can even earn more money than we need, and then we can take that money and do other worthwhile things in the world, whatever it is that we choose, you know, to do. I just think the path of the entrepreneur is a great one to be on, and I'm so grateful that all of us on this call are on that path. Thank you for being on that path, my friends. And with that, let's jump into how we can be better entrepreneurs, how we can grow as people, how we can learn to be uninhibited in our endeavors to deliver value to the marketplace. Because that's really what we're doing when we talk about these fears. It's how to not be held back, because these fears do hold us back. They prevent us from being all that we can be, and we want to eliminate them so that we can be the best that we can be, right? So we're going to jump into the rest of these fears today. We've just finished up the fear of ill health, and we're going to jump into the last couple here. My goal is to get through the last three of these fears so we can get moving on, because I don't want to linger on these fears. We want to address them and get them out, right? See them, move them, and move on. So here is the next fear, the fear of loss of love. The original source of this inherent fear needs but little description, because it obviously grew out of man's polygamous habit of stealing his fellow man's mate, and his habit of taking liberties with her whenever he could. Jealousy and other similar forms of dementia praecox grew out of man's inherited fear of the loss of love of someone. This fear is the most painful of all the six basic fears. It probably plays more havoc with the body and mind than any of the other basic fears, as it often leads to permanent insanity. The fear of the loss of love probably dates back to the Stone Age, when men stole women by brute force. They continue to steal females, but their technique has changed. Instead of force, they now use persuasion, the promise of pretty clothes, motor cars, and other bait, much more effective than physical force. Man's habits are the same as they were at the dawn of civilization, but he expresses them differently. Careful analysis has shown that women are more susceptible to this fear than men. The fact is easily explained. Women have learned from experience that men are polygamous by nature, that they are not to be trusted in the hands of rivals. And here are some of the symptoms of the fear of loss of love. Jealousy, the habit of being suspicious of friends and loved ones without any reasonable evidence of sufficient grounds. Jealousy is a form of dementia praecox which sometimes becomes violent without the slightest cause. The habit of accusing wife or husband of infidelity without grounds. General suspicion of everyone, absolute faith in no one. Fault finding, the habit of finding fault with friends, relatives, business associates, and loved ones upon the slightest provocation or without any cause whatsoever. Gambling, the habit of gambling, stealing, cheating, and otherwise taking hazardous chances to provide money for loved ones with the belief that love can be bought. The habit of spending beyond one's means or incurring debts to provide gifts for loved ones with the object of making a favorable showing. Insomnia, nervousness, lack of persistence, weakness of will, lack of self-control, lack of self-reliance, and bad temper. And I'll just insert here, you know, fear of loss of love. One of the best things we can do, I believe, is be proactive in the most important mastermind relationship that we have, and that is the relationship that we have with our significant other. If we're married, I'm learning so much from Dr. Napoleon Hill about how critical it is to be proactive in nourishing and continuing the romance in the marriage, right? And if we do this, we won't have to worry about this fear of loss of love. Next fear, fear of old age. In the main, this fear grows out of two sources. First, the thought that old age may bring with it poverty. Secondly, and by far the most common source of origin, from false and cruel teachings of the past, which have been too well mixed with fire and brimstone and other bogeys cunningly designed to enslave mankind through fear. In the basic fear of old age, man has two very sound reasons for his apprehension. One growing out of his distrust of his fellow men, who may seize whatever worldly goods he may possess, and the other arising from the terrible pictures of the world beyond, which were planted in his mind through social heredity before he came into full possession of his mind. The possibility of ill health, which is more common as people grow older, is also a contributing cause of this common fear of old age. Eroticism also enters into the cause of the fear of old age, as no man cherishes the thought of diminishing sex attraction. The most common cause of fear of old age is associated with the possibility of poverty. Poorhouse is not a pretty word. It throws a chill into the mind of every person who faces the possibility of having to spend his declining years on a poor farm. Another contributing cause of the fear of old age is the possibility of loss of freedom and independence, as old age may bring with it the loss of both physical and economic freedom. Symptoms of the fear of old age. The commonest symptoms of this fear are the tendency to slow down and develop an inferiority complex at the age of mental maturity, around the age of 40, falsely believing oneself to be slipping because of age. The habit of speaking apologetically of oneself as being old merely because one has reached the age of 40 or 50, Instead of reversing the rule and expressing gratitude for having reached the age of wisdom and understanding. The habit of killing off initiative, imagination, and self-reliance by falsely believing oneself too old to exercise these qualities. The habit of the man or woman of 40 dressing with the aim of trying to appear much younger and affecting mannerisms of youth, thereby inspiring ridicule by both friends and strangers. And I believe, my friends, one of the things we can do to prevent the fear of old age is to adopt a positive belief about increasing age that can serve us rather than have limiting beliefs that can hold us back. And I stole a positive belief right out of this book, Think and Grow Rich. Dr. Napoleon Hill later in this book says, I accept age as a great blessing that brings with it wisdom, self-control, and understanding not known to youth. And that's in my personal manifesto, and I read that daily. And you know what? I've come to believe it. Age is a blessing if we are growing, if we are taking advantage of what age has to bring to us, right? It's a great blessing. It can bring so much wisdom, right? So we need to look at it that way, my personal opinion. And the last fear, the fear of death. To some, this is the cruelest of all the basic fears. The reason is obvious. The terrible pangs of fear associated with the thought of death, in the majority of cases, may be charged directly to religious fanaticism. So-called heathen are less afraid of death than the more civilized. For hundreds of millions of years, man has been asking the still unanswered questions, whence and whither? Where did I come from, and where am I going? During the darker ages of the past, the more cunning and crafty were not slow to offer the answer to these questions for a price. Witness now the major source of origin of the fear of death. Quote, come into my tent, embrace my faith, accept my dogmas, and I will give you a ticket that will admit you straight away into heaven when you die, cries the leader of sectarianism. Quote, remain out of my tent, says the same leader, and may the devil take you and burn you throughout eternity, close quote. Eternity is a long time. Fire is a terrible thing. The thought of eternal punishment with fire not only causes man to fear death, it often causes him to lose his reason. It destroys interest in life and makes happiness impossible. During my research, I reviewed a book entitled A Catalog of the Gods, in which were listed the 30,000 gods which man has worshipped. Think of it, 30,000 of them, represented by everything from a crawfish to a man. It is little wonder that men have become frightened at the approach of death. While the religious leader may not be able to provide safe conduct into heaven, nor by lack of such provision allow the unfortunate to descend into hell, the possibility of the latter seems so terrible that the very thought of it lays hold of the imagination in such a realistic way that it paralyzes reason and sets up the fear of death. In truth, no man knows and no man has ever known what heaven or hell is like. Nor does any man know if either place actually exists. This very lack of positive knowledge opens the door of the human mind to the charlatan, so he may enter and control that mind with his stock of legerdemain and various brands of pious fraud and trickery. The fear of death is not as common now as it was during the age when there were no great colleges and universities. Men of science have turned the spotlight of truth upon the world, and this truth is rapidly freeing men and women from this terrible fear of death. The young men and women who attend the colleges and universities are not easily impressed by fire and brimstone. Through the aid of biology, astronomy, geology, and other related sciences, the fears of the dark ages which gripped the minds of men and destroyed their reason have been dispelled. Insane asylums are filled with men and women who have gone mad because of the fear of death. This fear is useless. Death will come no matter what anyone may think about it. Accept it as a necessity and pass the thought out of your mind. It must be a necessity or it would not come to all. Perhaps it is not as bad as it has been pictured. The entire world is made up of only two things, energy and matter. In elementary physics, we learn that neither matter nor energy, the only two realities known to man, can be created nor destroyed. Both matter and energy can be transformed, but neither can be destroyed. Life is energy, if it is anything. If neither energy nor matter can be destroyed, of course, life cannot be destroyed. Life, like other forms of energy, may be passed through various processes of transition or change, but it cannot be destroyed. Death is mere transition. If death is not mere change or transition, then nothing comes after death except a long, eternal, peaceful sleep. And sleep is nothing to be feared. Thus, you may wipe out forever the fear of death. And here are some of the symptoms of the fear of death. The general symptoms of this fear are the habit of thinking about dying instead of making the most of life, due generally to lack of purpose or lack of a suitable occupation. This fear is more prevalent among the aged, but sometimes the more youthful are victims of it. The greatest of all remedies for the fear of death is a burning desire for achievement backed by useful service to others. A busy person seldom has time to think about dying. He finds life too thrilling to worry about death. Sometimes the fear of death is closely associated with the fear of poverty, where one's death would leave loved ones poverty-stricken. In other cases, the fear of death is caused by illness and the consequent breaking down of physical body resistance. The commonest causes of the fear of death are ill health, poverty, lack of appropriate occupation, disappointment over love, insanity, religious fanaticism. So, my friends, there we have the last three fears. This is some heavy stuff, isn't it? But you know what? So much of it's so true. We have these fears as people, and it's important to think about them. Like we said, think about them. Know they're there. Come to some conclusions on an individual basis about them so we can handle them and get them out of our minds and we can move forward with a definite purpose and rendering useful service to other people and not be hampered by these fears. Now, I just want to add a couple quick thoughts about this last one, and then we will jump into the mastermind portion of the call. Fear of death is a very interesting fear, and I believe it's almost universal. You know, all of us face this transition that's coming up at some point in our futures, right? And I remember listening to Anthony Robbins talk about different cultures. And I remember him talking about one cult. You know, you think about how we in our culture respond to this transition that we call death. And a lot of times there's weeping and sadness and such great depression that attends this transition. And I remember Anthony Robbins talking about other cultures that would actually celebrate when a loved one face this transition called death. And the reason they celebrated was because they had these beliefs surrounding death that this person was transitioning into something so much more beautiful and glorious, and they believed it so much that it actually became a happy time for them. And I thought that was very interesting to see how some cultures react to this thing we call death in comparison to how other cultures react to this thing we call death. And I began to realize that our beliefs, we talk about these beliefs so often, but our beliefs around these things can have such a great impact on how we react to this thing that we're all going to go through, right? So I think it's important that, you know, we understand our beliefs and that maybe we begin to adopt some empowering beliefs about death and about these other fears. You know, one of the conclusions I came to a month or so ago as I was pondering this transition called death that we're all going to face is I thought to myself, you know, one of the things that I admire about death is that it is completely just. If you think about it, they say death and taxes, right? The only two things you can really count on. But truly, death will affect everyone. The rich, the poor, the wise, the ignorant. Every single soul that passes through this earth is going to go through a birth and is also going to go through a death. And the fact that it's so just, I mean, I don't know, you may think I'm weird for this, but I thought, you know, that's something that I can really admire about this thing, about this event, about this transition. It's so just. I love how it's going to affect everybody. No one is exempt from it, right? So maybe we need to start thinking about just some positive aspects, some positive conclusions. Adopt some positive beliefs about some of these things, and we can then eliminate the worry, eliminate the fear, get them out of our minds, and we can go back to the business at hand, which is making the most of the life that we've been given, being as useful as we can, causing as many smiles to come into the world as we can, right? Being as bright a light in the world as we can. And you know, we can't do that if we're hampered by these fears. So that's why it's important for us to cover this stuff. So with that, my friends, let's jump into the mastermind portion of the call. I'm excited to hear your thoughts. Just a couple quick reminders. This is not a company-specific call. It's a generic call, so please no mention of company names, system names. We're not here to promote or pitch or recruit. And also, brevity and relevance in your comments are always greatly appreciated. So just one moment, please. Star 6, who's first?
Paul Anthony from Charlotte,
North Carolina.
It's John.
Hey,
good morning.
And it's Elvira.
Anthony, Dustin, and John. Go ahead, Anthony.
Good morning, Think and Grow Rich family. Good morning. I just want to actually jump out real quick because I was watching a show last night on my phone, and it was called Serving Life, and it was about prisoners who were actually this one prison in Louisiana. They had actually built a hospice area because all these prisoners in that one area was actually going through the process of dying because they had life sentences. And you had murderers, you had everybody in there, you know, was serving some type of over 60 years in prison. And the thing about it is that the warden, he actually went through this program as far, you know, trying to redeem the hearts on basically on a moral level, trying to redeem the hearts of the prisoners that was taking care of these people through this program of hospice. So the program came out to be a real success, but most of the prisoners that was going through it, they came to find out, and their heart was, you know, softened through this. Even though they was hardened criminals, their heart was softened seeing the process of death and seeing the dying, you know, on the actual, you know, on the dying table. So I seen that yesterday, and then I started, you know, started contemplating in my mind and just thinking about the actual process of death and my actual demise. You know, whenever it comes, if it's around the corner or 50 years from now, it doesn't really matter. But the thing that I draw from it is that death is just a transitional door, you know, for the actual next life, you know. And, you know, I get comfort out of that, and then I try to do on a moment-to-moment basis. I try to, you know, make every second, every moment, every, you know, every millisecond count, that I'm alive on this earth to bring happiness, to bring joy, not to be stuck in negative emotions, not to be stuck in worry, none of that stuff that can hamper me from seeing the good in the world, seeing the good in people, you know. So that's basically what I drew from the program. But it's such an interesting topic, and I love the topic of death because, like you said, Paul, I see it as fascinating, and the truth is, it's a very fascinating subject for me. But I turn it back over to you. Everybody have a blessed Friday, and I'll turn back over to you, Paul.
Thank you, Anthony. Love it, man. Did I hear Dustin coming out?
Absolutely. Good morning, everybody, and hello, beautiful people. And I had to jump out today. I've been very quiet this week because I've been going through my 3M Post-its because, man, this has been one heavy week. And it seems to me the more I'm engaged in this study and the more times I go through the book with this very special group, it begins to become more deeper and deeper because you tune into it on a totally different level. So this week, a few of the things that have really stood out to me, and first of all, I'm Dustin Walker, and I'm 42 years young. You know, I learned that from Mr. Paul Hutchins. When we talk about our age and whatnot, let's celebrate it. You know, I'm not 64 years old. I'm 64 years young, baby. So I'm Dustin Walker. I'm 42 years young, and I look at death as a badge earned. When you live a proper life and a grateful life, I agree with Anthony and Paul. It's a badge earned, and get ready for the next step because game's on at that point. But when we talk about fears, excuse me, here's what I've come to my conclusion. is that when we master these fears, when we master the fears, we have the master key, and then that gives us the privilege of creating in our own mind that burning desire for the definite form of riches that Dr. Napoleon Hill discusses all the time. So when we gather riches in money, we also gather riches that can't be measured in money. And what I mean by that is that the riches provide us happiness. When we have money, we have long life. When we have money, we have enjoyment and peace of mind. But we also have learned with fears that the most valuable treasure of all, good health, we can have that. It can be ours when we conquer fear and we get rid of that illness in our head that it can bring. So then we open our arms and we gratefully receive the mightiest treasures of life that await us to reach out there and take them. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, they await us to reach out there and take them when we demand upon ourselves to do that. So a little summary about this week, something that's really stood out in the book this week and some points is that I've come to find that for sure we are the master of our own fate. There's no doubt about that. But we must make our motivations move us forward. They must serve us well, and our motivations must move us forward. Because if we're not moving forward, we're standing still. So another thing I found out is, and it seems to me, and everyone else can chime in on this, but no one can think for us, nobody can act for us, and nobody can succeed for us but ourselves. And I'm beginning to find out that we need to be happy for that, because the lesson is in the journey of success. The lesson is in every single page that we turn every day, we find a lesson, and we need to celebrate that and be glad that we are responsible for our own success, our own happiness, no one else. And, as Dr. Napoleon Hill always says, what the mind can believe, the mind can achieve. And I have noticed that Think and Grow Rich, as we all know, has helped millions of people become millionaires. But we have the ticket to freedom. We have that in our hands. And every secret that we need in order to think and grow rich lies abundantly in our hands. So let's just kick these fears to the curb. Ain't nobody got time for them because they just slow us down. They get in our way. And, man, I'm here to live a positive life, to be a beacon of positivity to all I engage with every day. And this book, you people, this glorious life that I live and I get to share with everybody in this call is just a beautiful thing that I am grateful for. I love everybody on this call. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping to create the person that I am becoming, because I'm becoming a beautiful butterfly, and I'm so happy for that. Thank you, everybody, and have the best of days today.
Beautiful thoughts, Dustin. John Chapman, go ahead, sir.
Oh, wow, Dustin Walker. He's a beautiful butterfly.
Yes, he is.
Wow.
Hear me roar.
what a wonderful experience to be back here live again with the Think and Grow Rich family. Over the course of the past week, I've just been putting in a ginormous amount of hours into my business, and my body actually requires sleep, so I've been sleeping a lot during this time. And today I just know that I had needed to get up, because I actually went to bed at 8 p.m. last night just because I had to. But here's the deal. Death is a very interesting subject. When I was younger and I was ripping and running, and I had several instances where people pulled guns on me. I had a 357 pulled on me. I had a shotgun pulled on me, and I had a rifle pulled on me, and then I had a knife pulled on me too. And at each one of those times, I didn't fear it. But I didn't fear it not for the reasons that I don't fear death today. I didn't fear it back then because, quite frankly, I was too young and dumb to understand that I would have missed out on all of life's experiences if my life would have been cut short the way that so many of my friends, unfortunately, experienced. And as I've grown, as I've matured, as I've become more knowledgeable as it pertains to life and all of the wonderful things in it, now I take a look at death as an adventure. You know, who really knows? Who really knows what's on the other side? You know, there are people who have incredible beliefs. You take a look at the people who believe in reincarnation, and they believe that according to their own works, that is how they will manifest themselves in the next life, or maybe they'll be able to ascend to the next level. Then you have the Christians who believe that they're going to go to heaven, and then you have the atheists who believe that there is nothing, that it's just peace. But whatever it is, on a personal basis, I feel now that as long as I'm doing right, as long as I'm doing what I am supposed to be doing, that I'm following my heart, that I'm empowering other people, that I do my best to live my best each and every day, that I, on my deathbed, look back and say, God damn, I had a role, and I let nothing left to chance, and I put it down each and every day. I will go into the next life 100% content, and I will know that I came, I saw, and I kicked ass. And that, to me, will have been living a damn good life. Back to you, Paul.
Dan from Dunedin.
Thank you, John. Great points as always. Dan, go ahead, and then Elvier, please.
Wow, that's some great words, John Chapman, and it really is very inspiring. Matter of fact, this call is very inspiring. Matter of fact, when Paul shared about the listening to Napoleon Hill in his own words, I got that audio. I listened to it. He had a story about how he was embracing his father's death and did it with such an ability that he didn't let it make him feel bad or sad. And he also told the crowd that he was talking to how proud he was of his life, and he was embracing death with great joy because he knows that transition is a wonderful thing. So yes, do be the flower that you are. Bloom and blossom as you should, knowing that your life is not ending. It's just part of a continuum journey of life force energy that continues to spread. And that is what fills me with great joy as I remember the middle name of my mom, Betty Joy Porter, as I continue to bring out joyous feelings to all that I embrace, because I want to do more than just be a snow cone or cotton candy. And I know that it's all about not only bringing a better service to those that we are in contact with. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Dan. Good stuff. Elvira.
Hey, Paul. It's Lisa.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Fabulous Friday again. You know, here is the thing about fears, and I said it yesterday also. I think it was yesterday. We only have two fears, right? That's what we're born with. All the rest is pushed onto us. And it's because, you know, fear is a cash cow. It's really sad. And the question is, are you buying into it? I mean, listen, this is September. Fall is coming. Winter is coming. Just look how everything is changing in the stores, in the advertising on television. Most likely, I don't watch television. You know, you see the flu shots and all that stuff. Are you buying into that? It's a cash cow. Fear is a total cash cow. It's too dirty, too disgusting, really, to talk about. And of course, the fear of death. Yeah, I mean, I believe in my book, if you fear death, then you have to ask yourself, am I living a meaningful life? Am I giving it my all? Am I satisfied with what I'm contributing now? Because if you are, then you can, right before you transition over to the next life or to the peace in between, you can say to yourself, you know what? I lived a great life, and I contributed, and I passed on so much. And then, you know, really, you don't have to fear anything besides what we have learned so far from those who had near-death experiences. It appears to be beautiful. So just look at everything. Write down these fears. Just go through them and go, like, do I have that? Do I really feel that? Do I really? Write it down. You know, writing down really makes you think about it in longhand, please. Write it down. Make it happen. That little book from Henrietta Clausen. Is this applying to you? Do I have it? Why do I have it? Let me change this around. Let me make my life more meaningful. Who am I? What am I doing here? What am I contributing to society? When you have all that in place, you don't fear death at all. You don't fear anything. You're invincible. You're the creation that God wanted you to be. Have a fabulous weekend. Thank you, Paul.
Powerful, Elvira. Thank you so much for that. Lisa, go ahead.
Hey, Paul. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, fantastic. Good morning, Thinking Grow Rich family. This is Lisa Wow. Lisa Walker. I used to really be scared of death, and I wanted and I was all of, oh my gosh, I think it was, I don't know, like 13, 14, 15. And I used to be like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Like, I'm going to die. And now I have to say this, a little preface is that my dad did pass away when I was 12 years old. So how I figured I was going to die immediately after that, I don't even know. But I literally used to have such a strong fear of death. It was, like, insane. I didn't even want to go to sleep. A part of it was watching horror movies, too, I think. But here's what happened for me personally. I know Dr. Napoleon Hill did talk about religion and how, you know, now people don't necessarily fear death and fire and brimstone. But for me, that became the solution. At age 18, I personally accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And one of the parts of that says, you know, death, where is your sting? Oh, grave, where is your victory? So that then sort of calmed me personally because I was literally, I mean, I did not even want to go to sleep because I thought I was going to die, like, at any moment. And so I guess my lesson is to find what actually gives you life. In the case of me and my personal belief system, religion, spirituality did give me personally life. And, I mean, maybe because I was just absolutely crazed about death. And, again, my father, my best friend at 12 years old, did pass away. And so that was a big thing for me going forward. And one of the other things that has been touched upon, if anyone's ever read, I'm sure many of us have, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, what the author says, you know, the way that you begin to live life is you start at the end of the transition of death. And what is it that you want people to say and do? And I think it relates, in my opinion, to why spirituality, knowing where you're going, per se, after the transition of death, because why it was important for God to say, you don't worry about death, because God's whole purpose, his divinity, we all agree, in infinite intelligence, his divinity it took away the sting of death so that we can focus on living life and serving people all around us. Because if we were worried about death, again, according to my personal belief, Jesus took away death, but we don't have to worry about death, but we can live life and live it as the scripture says, more abundantly. And really, Think and Grow Rich, the whole premise of it is about abundant life, not a mediocre life, but an abundant life. So I realized after reading the book, The 7 Highly Effective Habits of Effective People, again, my personal spirituality, that really conquering the fear of death is really about living the legacy of life, meaning the people, no one is going to go in the grave with you, but the people that you have served, whether in your business, but not just the people that you serve, but their children that you serve, their children that are now in a greater way because you were the first one to, in my case, help their business or help them start their business or help them become successful in an MLM. So not only are we affecting that, and again, to me, overcoming the fear of death is living the legacy of life, and so not only are we just dealing with the person that we see directly in front, but we're dealing with their entire family. We're dealing with their aunt, their uncle, their mother. If you help someone, the more people you help, that's why it is so lucrative, or why money becomes attractive to you, because you're not just helping one person, you're helping their entire family to become successful, to get in a better way. And so therefore, when it does come time for that transition, even if it is cut short, then you, if you make it living about the legacy of life, then even if it happens to be cut short or what have you, you have done everything and you have affected not just that person, but their entire family. We're talking about generations upon generations. And that is the thing that helps to overcome the fear for me. Hopefully that was helpful. Back to you.
Thank you. Great perspective. Yes, Fortune, go ahead, sir.
Good morning, good morning. So I'm sitting here in the car today, and I'm thinking to myself this question. What role does fear play in my life? You know, that's an interesting question to me. I don't know if anyone else has ever thought about it from that way, but what role does fear play in life? Because, you know, in essence, that fear is actually it's a survival mechanism. You have your fight or flight mechanism that kicks in when you're afraid. Am I going to face this challenge, or am I going to run from it? You know, and if we're trying to grow, is fear in our best interest? And if fear is in our best interest, how do we use fear to improve our situation? So how can we use fear, basically transmute it into some positive energy? You know, what do I mean by that?
Okay. I had this auntie when I was growing up. She had an auntie. She came to watch us over the summertime, right? My Aunt Melissa. My Aunt Melissa loves scary movies. And I'm like, I think I'm only 8 or 9 years old, and I'm trying to watch scary movies with her, right? So she had this whole lineup. Started off, and I still remember this. Started off like Gremlins, and then she went on to some Stephen King movie. I think it was something to do with the animals or whatever when they were in the, I can't think of it, Pet Cemetery. That's where it was, Pet Cemetery. And then she had another one where it was this little bitty creature that would, like, it was like a little gremlin-type thing, little creature, and what it would do would get on a little kid's chest and it would, like, steal their breath from them, okay? So I went to bed trying to be a big boy, of course. I'm thinking I could go to bed by myself. I get in the bed, I'm freaking out in the bed for weeks after this. I'm freaking out in the bed. I have all the closets closed and all this type of stuff. And one day, I just could not bear it. I couldn't take it anymore. And I run again. I go get in my parents' room. Dad takes me back to my room, and I get a little while longer. I get back up, and I run back into my parents' room. But Daddy tells me, like, why are you running our room? And I'm like, I'm scared. He said, well, remember this. It's your dream. And in your dream, you can have anything that you want. Remember that. Now, I don't know if he knew what he was saying at that time, or if he really meant it, or he was just trying to say something to get me back into my bed. But if you think about that thing, how is that really, is that true or not? Because every day we're told to consistently visualize and think about and dream big, and that we can have anything that we want when we dream. So we have the ability through our own visualizations to face our own dreams, to face our own fears, to have anything that we want, so we can defeat the fears that are in our lives. I didn't have to go back to my parents' room anymore, because when I had these little dreams, first off, I put Dink, the little dinosaur, I had a stuffed animal, I put him at the end of my bed to watch over me. But then I also, in my dreams, I would, like, conjure up all these swords and these weapons, and I'd become this martial arts ninja, and I could fight anything. I never had to worry about it anymore. But the same thing may have started becoming true in my own life. When I start taking and embracing my own fears, what can I do? What can I become in order to beat my fears? I figured out a way from that one little thing when I was a child to face my own fears, and to the point where I became in high school, I was one of those guys that you can't challenge me to do anything. I was going to try it. So, guys, I want you to ask yourself, what role does fear play in my life? And if it's a negative role, how can you take your fears and transmute them into some positive energy? I'm done, Paul.
Appreciate those thoughts, Fortune. Star
good
six, who's
good
next?
Morning, my friends. Paul, Mr. Hutchins, how are you?
Excellent. How are you, Mr. Martin?
It's just fantastic, you know. You know, fears, of death is very. That's a very interesting thing. You know, are people really afraid of dying or living? You know, when you don't know what tomorrow may bring, what the next second may bring, and you know, the life is really, when you really consider life, it's really virtual. In other words, it's a dream. You know, when you think about it, you can only live right now. 5 minutes ago, you cannot live anymore. I keep thinking about tomorrow, but it never comes. It's always now. It's so interesting. I mean, when you really consider what's going on, is all a mental phenomenon. And so, when in the scriptures or in the religions, if you think there's a better place for you, then how can you be afraid of going to a more joyous place, a better place? That's such so interesting. And so that little voice in the back of your head going on and on, you know, it's really a virtual impossibility to even fear death. It's something that really happened in a second. But look at your life. Look at your life today. You think about 10 years from now, what's it going to be like? You think about retirement. What's going to happen, all these processions, and you forget about living. And so, you know, it's really things that people conjure up in your mind from generations and centuries ago and have this pile of negativity, and people forget to live. So, my friends, today I consider that you live in opulence, live in a virtual abundance. So, Mr. Hudson, back to you, my friends. And have a day filled with opulence.
Paul,
great thoughts. Ray Briggs.
Yes, who is the lady and then Ray?
Dolores.
Dolores, go ahead real quick.
I've had this mantra since I was probably 16. Live, love, and leave a beautiful memory. Back to you.
Thank you, Dolores. Ray, good morning. Go ahead, sir.
Awesome. Definitely just want to jump out real quick. I'm going to be in and out in less than 60 seconds. I just had this thought come across my mind when I was listening to the topic on the fear of death. And one image came to my mind. I remember when I first started getting in the industry, and I saw a video. And I know it's on YouTube. It's a video interview with Will Smith. And in that video, they asked him, you know why he's so successful. And the answer he gave, he said, and I'll never forget, he said, I never considered myself overly talented. Where I excel is in a burning desire to succeed. And when Paul was saying the opposite end of fear of death is a burning desire to succeed, that video replay came in my mind. In the image that Will Smith painted, he said, if me and you get on a treadmill, one of two things are going to happen. You're going to get off first, or I'm going to die. He said, one of the biggest things I'm afraid of is the fear of being afraid. And I always remember that when you were talking about people being afraid to die or in this industry where people get overwhelmed and they feel like they're going to die if they, you know, put that video out there or do that blog post or talk to that person or do whatever action is called for to be successful in their business, you know, get to the point where you know, you're willing to just lay it all on the line. You know what I'm saying? You're willing to die for whatever it is that you're doing, whatever your why is. You know what I mean? So I just want to throw that out there and just help out, you know, whatever situation you're up against or whatever, if it's that fear of death or that fear of taking that action because you feel you're going to die, you know, just get that wrapped around your mind. Just imagine yourself on a treadmill and the person standing next to you is that thing that you're afraid of, you know, and tell that thing that it's either going to get off first or you're going to die. Back to you.
Great stuff, Ray. Thank you so much, man. Really appreciate those
thoughts. South Carolina. David. Hey, it's David Dom.
I heard New Child first. Go ahead, New Child.
Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to say I can dance with the wolves and I can dance in the rain. I don't fear death and I don't fear pain. Live now, y'all. Live strong. Back to you, Paul.
Oh, I love it, man. Thanks. Thanks, dear child. David Dom, good morning. Go ahead real quick. We've got about a minute left.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Yeah, so we were talking about the fear of death, and I had you know, several thoughts about that. When I was growing up, I got myself into a lot of unfavorable situations, you know? I mean, I know one thing is for sure is I'm not supposed to be dead yet. I'm here for a purpose because I've had angels watching over me all my life. If not, I'd be dead already. And so, but what to add to that, it's not a purpose to just live a menial existence. It's literally a purpose to enlighten and share and learn and grow and then share some more and take whatever I can and be a light to others. Lift them up. That's why I love this call. I love all you guys and appreciate you, Paul. Thanks, man.
Great thoughts, David. Really. All right, my friends. Well, thank you for a wonderful.
Hey, what's doing?
Someone was not muted there. Let's move forward today, my friends, and let's make the most of this beautiful gift we've all been given of this day. Let's take action. Let's focus on our visions. Let's be useful to the world. Let's grow. Let's love. Let's change. Let's plow through temporary setbacks. Let's make it a great day and a great weekend, and we'll see you all back here Monday morning on the Think and Grow Rich call. Thanks for being you. Bye for now.